All right, I call this meeting of Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. This is Wednesday, May 16th, 9:30 a.m., and we are in the Lincoln County Courthouse, Room 108. First item is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present. Second, although it's not on the agenda, I will offer some insight into my attire. Saturday night, CASA had its annual beach bash fundraiser. CASA's court-appointed special advocates, which deals with neglected and abused children that are in the judicial system. I am chair of that board, and one of my fellow board members, Lisa Ely, paid $150 toward the fundraiser if I would wear this shirt and jacket to the Board of Commissioners meeting today. So thank you, Lisa, for your $150 contribution to CASA, and I am wearing the jacket and shirt, and I'll ask our public information officer to take a picture at an appropriate time to provide visual evidence to Lisa Ely. Lisa also is a board member, and she works for Samaritan Health Systems, so
perhaps, my honor. Mr. Chair, the deeper question might be, was this actually in your closet already? And if so, why?
Well, the short answer is, a year ago, this outfit was located at the Elks Club, where the beach bash has been held the last couple of years, and it reappeared Saturday night. A year ago, I think Toby Cole was paid some $100 or somewhere thereabouts to wear the outfit for the day. So it's.
I got to offer a little advice. Don't wear that to the waterfront.
Okay.
You know, it's for a worthy cause. And again, thank you, Lisa, for your donation. All right, we'll move along. Next item is recognition and proclamations. This is a resolution proclaiming May 15th, 2018 as National Peace Officers Memorial Day and May 13th through 19th, 2018 as National Police Week in Lincoln County. I believe our presenters are in the audience. I'll ask them to come forward, and I'll ask Commissioner Hall to read the proclamation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whereas the Congress and President of the United States have designated May 15th as Peace Officers Memorial Day, and the week in which it falls is National Police Week, and whereas the members of the law enforcement agencies in Lincoln County play an essential role in safeguarding the rights and freedoms of the citizens of Lincoln County, and whereas it is important that all citizens know and understand the problems, duties, and responsibilities of their police agencies, and that members of our police agencies recognize their duty to serve the people by safeguarding life and property, by protecting them against violence and disorder, and by protecting the innocent against deception and the weak against coercion or intimidation. And whereas the men and women of the police agencies of Lincoln County continuously provide a vital public service, now, therefore, the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners call upon all citizens of Lincoln County and upon all patriotic, civic, and educational organizations to observe the week of May 13th through 19th, 2018 as National Police Week, in which all citizens are encouraged to honor police officers, past and present, who, by their faithful and loyal devotion to their responsibilities, have provided dedicated service to their communities, and in so doing have established for themselves an enviable and enduring reputation for preserving the rights and security of all citizens. We further call upon all citizens of Lincoln County to observe Tuesday, May 15th as National Peace Officers Memorial Day in honor of those law enforcement officers who, through their courageous deeds, have made the ultimate sacrifice in service to their community or have become disabled in the performance of duty, and to recognize and pay respect to the survivors of our fallen heroes.
Thank you,
Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir. My name is Brian Cameron, Patrol Commander of Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. Proud to represent the men and women of the Patrol Division. Before I get started, I'd just like to say that I intended on being the best dressed person in the room. That didn't happen. Thanks, Lisa.
Well, I'd maybe offer a trade, but I don't think I'd want the risks to go with your job. So
we'll talk later.
Thank you.
In 1962, President John F. Kennedy proclaimed May 15th as National Peace Officer Memorial Day and the week of May 15th as National Police Week. National Police Week pays special recognition to those law enforcement officers who have lost their lives in line of duty for the safety and protection of others. Being a law enforcement officer in the United States is a unique profession. I can't think of too many other professions which have a phone app that track the number of people in your line of work that die each year. The app known as Officer Down Memorial Page tracks three basic categories: death by gunfire, auto-related, and other which is generally medically related. To give you an idea how we're doing this year, we're at 53 line of duty deaths compared to 51 last year. The numbers are close, but how we got to those numbers is completely different. This year, auto-related and other deaths is down by 63%, which is awesome. But death by gunfire is up by 50%. We encourage our members to monitor this app, not to be morbid, but to learn from their deaths and what they can do to avoid the same fate. The takeaway is cops are prone to heart attacks and strokes, so let's maintain our fitness and don't let that be you. Cops tend to drive too fast. Let's slow down and not let that be you. The last one, death by gunfire, is certainly much trickier because the world is changing. In 2016, for example, the FBI reported 17 peace officers died as a result of ambush-style attacks. Generally with firearms, compared to 20 years earlier, where 5 died by the same circumstance. The answer in our office is to follow the national trends, to attend debriefs and lessons learned, and provide the best realistic scenario-based training to put our deputies in what's referred to as high-risk, low-frequency situations. This type of training allows our deputies to experience these dynamic events in controlled situation and learning environments. It allows our deputies to make mistakes in training and not in real life. Being a law enforcement officer in the United States is a unique profession. I can't off the top of my head think of too many other professions where you would say it's an extremely good year if you have less than 100 of us killed at work. The movement Below 100 started in 2010 with this one mission: to reduce the line of duty deaths below 100 each year. When the concept was created, the founders understood that saying the goal to have zero law enforcement deaths each year was unrealistic. But keeping it below 100 was feasible, even though it's a number not seen in the U.S. since 1947. Our office believes in below 100 and the vision to eliminate preventable line-of-duty deaths and serious injuries through common-sense training designed to focus on 5 areas under our control. 1, wear your seatbelt. 2, wear your ballistic vest. 3, watch your speed. 4, we call it win, what's important now. And 5, remember, complacency kills. Being a law enforcement officer in the United States is a unique profession. I can't off the top of my head think of too many other professions where, on average, 57,000 of us are assaulted each year doing our job, resulting in over 16,000 injuries. Those are staggering numbers. Well, so everything I've spoken about today relates to the ultimate sacrifice a peace officer may give in the line of duty, but I'd be remiss not to point the routine sacrifices our deputies face on a daily basis. When you and I are enjoying family holidays with friends, our deputies are on patrol. When you and I are enjoying special evenings and weekends, our deputies are on patrol. And this one's near and dear to my heart. When your wife, spouse, significant other says, you absolutely have to be home on time tonight, that is guaranteeing that you're not going to be home on time tonight. My wife has learned that a long time ago. So she pretty much surprises me at the end of the night that we have something going on. So that's the way we trick it at home. To wrap up, the men and women of the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office Patrol Division are highly skilled professionals who are dedicated to their number one priority, service to our citizens and visitors. We never take for granted the support and trust our public and you, the commissioners, place in our office. And in return, we are committed to providing excellent law enforcement services. Commissioners, thanks again for this proclamation and your continued support of our office.
Comments? Thank you, Lieutenant. Don't have a question, just really a comment that I think it's great that we have this opportunity to give public recognition and thanks to our patrol officers and to bring home the fact that this is a dangerous profession and to salute the men and women who have sworn to give their lives, if necessary, in service to others.
Thank you.
I guess I would say we had a casual or I think even a joking exchange at the beginning about changing uniforms, and I indicated that I didn't want the risk, but I think people fail to recognize that every single day you get up, you put on the uniform, or you represent the sheriff's office, and you don't know what's going to happen, nor does your family. And you know, it's one thing to live with an unknown for a short period of time, but when you're dealing with that unknown and it's really potentially life or death, that's highly stressful. And I think a lot of the people frequently fail to recognize that ongoing stress that law enforcement officers, police officers deal with daily. So I appreciate the service of you and your fellow deputies and the police and law enforcement in general, certainly. It's a high-risk occupation.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I came from a high-risk occupation and still do it, but it's not as risky as it used to be, thanks to modern changes since I came here. The more technology we get, the better equipped we are, the less dangerous. So part of our job is to make sure you have the budget to have the equipment that can make your job less dangerous. And so I'm happy to be a part of reporting and what you're doing.
We appreciate it, sir.
Any other comments, or
no?
Entertain a motion.
I would move that we proclaim May 15th as National Police Officers Memorial Day and May 13th through 19th as National Police Office Police Week in Lincoln County.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion is passed. Thank you, Lieutenant. And keep up the good work. All right, next item is the adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature, or items that have come before us before. If there's any item individual wishes to highlight, you may do so. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you. Motion to adopt the consent calendar.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion carries. Next item is a decision action item regarding the establishing the process for appointment of an interim treasurer. I believe Assistant County Counsel Urbage is here to present information.
Thank you, Commissioners and Council. I'm Jerry Urbage, for the record. And before you is a proposed order setting a process to appoint an interim treasurer. By way of background, what has happened is that the Lincoln County Treasurer, Linda Pilsen, has submitted a letter to the board, which has been forwarded to the clerk's office, where she has said that she is retiring, that is, resigning from office, effective June 29, 2018. So we do have that letter, and when that happens, it sets in motion a number of things, an election to happen, but also it's for the board to appoint an interim treasurer. And in this county, the treasurer also performs the tax collection duties. So a word about Linda Pilsen. Just want to say that she's had some 32 years of dedicated service to the citizens of Lincoln County, and she's actually served as the treasurer since 2008. And so she's performed in a dedicated way for a long period of time. But she is retiring, and what that means is that, according to the law in Chapter 236, the Board of Commissioners has to appoint an interim person to take care of the office until it's filled by election. And for those who may be watching this, there are two qualifications for this position. You have to be a citizen of the United States and elector under the Oregon Constitution. And then you also have to be a resident of Lincoln County for a period of 1 year prior to appointment. So those are the requirements for interested persons. It wasn't too long ago that this commission faced a similar situation where you had in the assessor's office the need to appoint an interim assessor. The assessor requirements are somewhat different, so it's not completely the same. But the proposal that I'm presenting to the board is that you essentially follow a similar process in filling in an interim treasurer slash tax collector. And this is the proposal, that today you open this up to interested persons who meet the qualifications that I just went over. And you open it up by telling the public that interested applicants can submit a letter of interest. The letter of interest should describe the person's background, experience, and qualifications. Also tell the board whether or not the applicant is seeking election. And the election will be in November of this year. That's how it works. And also, the Constitution tells us that you will actually serve not a part of a term, but a full four-year term. So the letter goes over the experience qualifications. Are you seeking election? And then you should have three references that the board can check out. And the references would detail the applicant's demeanor and management experience qualifications and so on. The proposal is that applicants would have 3 weeks to submit these letters. So they would be due by 5 p.m. on June 6th. And once these are received, then the board would conduct interviews. The statutes tell us that when you have interviews of an elected position, they must be an open meeting. So this would not be an executive session. You would conduct interviews, and that at some point after the interviews, you'd have deliberations and make that appointment. So that's the proposed procedure. It's in accordance with the law. It's outlined in the order I've prepared for you. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
I have a question. You indicated that the letter needed to state whether or not the applicant was willing to run for election, and that it would then be a four-year term. So that's going to change the cycle, if you will, of when the treasurer runs for election, because currently we're in midterm, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Normally, the treasurer's election would next be held in, let's see if I can do my math, 2020, but we're now going to have an election in 2018, so then the next election for treasurer would actually be 2022.
You're absolutely right. That is correct.
All right.
Not all positions are that way, but the Constitution tells us that's the way it is.
No, I just wanted to clarify that that changes
the cycle.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
No, I'm ready to move forward with this. I think a three-week window of opportunity should be ample time for candidates to submit their letters of interest.
Let me. Now, I'm sorry. I just thought of a question. So let's say we have 12 applicants. Do we have the ability? How do we winnow that down, or do we interview all 12? Or is that up to us?
It's up to you. Okay. You do not have to interview all of the applicants. And so, again, that's up to you. And one other thing I would like to say about this whole process is that if you approve the order, we'll have a press release go out today that will mirror your order.
Yeah, again, I don't have any preconceived ideas whether or not I'd interview 12 or 15 or 20 people, if that's the case, but I wanted to ask the question. So.
Yes.
Okay.
I would move that we approve this order setting the process to appoint an interim Lincoln County treasurer.
Second.
We moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. We're now down to reports, selected officials, department directors' reports, and Sheriff Landers is here to talk about National Stepping Up Day of Action.
And Steve Sparks, our Stepping Up consultant, is going to join the sheriff, and I'm also going to step down for a moment to join them as well.
Step down to step up.
Step down to step up. Yep.
Make a comment real quickly to back up again. Curtis Landers, Lincoln County Sheriff, but just to point out that I know that Lieutenant Cameron had Most of his comments written up for today before last night, and I also know that last night he was called to one of those things that he was talking about and didn't actually get home and probably in bed till after 5 this morning. So just to point out that that can happen to any of us, and but it was a successful outcome, and that's what we could hope. So I just wanted to point that out, recognize that for Lieutenant Cameron, and thank him for being here today under those circumstances.
Thank you.
I'll start, I guess.
Okay.
Again, Curtis Landers, Lincoln County Sheriff, and thank you for having us here today. It is May 16th is Stepping Up Initiative Day of Action, a chance to further promote the program, provide additional awareness, and an update on the progress that we've had. May marks the 3-year anniversary of Stepping Up, a national initiative to reduce the number of people with mental illness in jails. Since the launch, more than 400 counties in 43 states have passed a resolution or proclamation to join Stepping Up. In Lincoln County, on October 5th, 2016, you declared by resolution that Lincoln County would join the initiative. Since then, we have been working toward this goal to reduce the number of inmates with mental illness in our jail. One of the major projects we did was completing our sequential intercept model mapping exercise on August 29th and 30th, 2017. After receiving a SAMHSA Gaines Center grant, and we were one of 7 counties nationwide to receive that grant. The SIM model provided us with a roadmap to move forward with the Stepping Up goal to reduce the number of inmates with mental illness in our jail. It identified our priorities at each intercept with the goal to divert an individual with mental illness away from jail as soon as possible. Steps we have already taken include working with HHS, Health and Human Services, to provide a crisis response team. This is a grant-funded program to have a round-the-clock crisis team available to respond to the scene with law enforcement to address someone's need who's in a crisis. We also obtained a direct crisis line to our local mental health professionals for law enforcement, which is something we haven't had for several years. A lot of this came out of the SIM, and it's worked out very successfully so far. We continue to establish partnerships and open communication with behavioral health staff at Health and Human Services staff. Some of the gaps that we're going to work toward is restoring a detox center, housing for pretrial offenders, additional shelters for homeless, other diversion options for law enforcement, working on the jail overcrowding issue, programming in the jail, and medication availability. These are all priorities identified in the sequential intercept mapping, among others. At this point, I think I'll turn it over to whoever wants to go next. Steve, did you want to take us from there? And
sure, I can do that.
Commissioner wanted to...
You want to do it that way?
Okay, sure.
I'm with the A team. I'm proud to work with these two. We've been working together for a couple of years now, and it keeps me young, indeed. The timing is right to talk about building community capacity for treatment and recovery. We've got a couple of good things to share this morning. Number one, we, as you know, we have a new partner in town, a nonprofit partner, Chance Recovery from Albany, and they have a pretty robust model for navigating those in the population that we talk about, those that need services. And they've had that model up and running for a number of years in Albany. And we have an opportunity here to not only build up our capacity with peer-delivered services, and Chance is now negotiating contracts with Health and Human Services. They're launching peer-delivered services training in our county and recruiting peer support specialists. And that aspect of our community structure is very critical because it's more cost-effective than clinicians, and it fits right in. And it's kind of like the physician-assistant approach that we see in primary care. I would say that you could think about peer-delivered services in the same way. We could never hire enough clinicians to do all the things we need to do, so we need to take in our community and get our community re-engaged, and Chance is helping us to do that. The second part of this is we have an opportunity with a piece of property that we purchased last year over next to the American Legion Hall, a beautiful piece of property, and it's been stalled. So Commissioner Hall asked me to take a look at that along with others to see if we can build an operational plan, a public-private partnership to make that sustainable. Chance is working with me on that. We started the conversations last week. They visited the property and got real excited and said, wow, this is a perfect opportunity for us to build a hub like we have in Albany and begin to build on a public-private partnership that has a sustainability component. We can't just rely on one source of funding, as you know, so we need a diversified funding strategy to be sustainable for the long run. The Stepping Up Initiative has given us the roadmap to do that, and we're actually doing it right now. In addition to that, we do have a recent federal government funding opportunity to build capacity. We're working on that right now. The sheriff is leading on that. Lieutenant Adam Shanks and I are working on that. We have other resources to help us, and we really feel confident that we can win that. And that capacity building grant will give us money so that we can then start to build more capacity in the community treatment area with pretrial services, diversion services, and all that. So we are, as we speak, becoming a county that's becoming very competitive in terms of funding, finding diversified funding opportunities, and go after that. And there are plenty of them out there, but we have to get very, very good at being competitive to win those grants. And I think that we're at a place now where we can feel very confident that we're on our way. So those are the three highlights right now on this day.
Okay. And what I would add is, as the sheriff mentioned, Stepping Up was launched nationally 3 years ago by three organizations: National Association of Counties, American Psychiatric Association, and Council of State Governments. But it's really led and driven at the local level. The reason that county commissions are asked to adopt resolutions of participation and support is the acknowledgement that these services are primarily delivered at the local level. And it's, in addition to our state prisons, it's our local jails that are being overwhelmed by people with mental illness and addiction issues who really don't belong behind bars. They belong with supportive housing, treatment, and other services. And since Stepping Up launched, I just checked NACO's website this morning, 425 counties have signed on now, including 21 out of 36 in Oregon. To mirror what these gentlemen have said, the amount of local participation and buy-in has been amazing. Certainly as a county government, as a sheriff's office, as a health and human services department, we've got a primary responsibility for service delivery and a leadership responsibility, but it's not just us alone. And what excites me most about this is the fact that we're getting the idea across and we're getting buy-in from people who say, this is truly a community problem. We all have to be part of the solution. Samaritan Health Services, especially in recent months, has been at the table and saying, we want to partner with you. We want to look at innovative ideas. We want to support you. We've got faith groups, churches. We've got the local chapter of NAMI, National Association for the Mentally Ill. We've got all kinds of folks saying, you know, this is a huge community problem. The way we've been doing it has not been helping people into recovery. It's not been improving public safety. It's not been maximizing public resources. And we can do better. And I think thanks to the framework that Stepping Up has provided, we are doing better, although we've still got a long way to go. But the momentum since we did this resolution a little over a year ago, I think, is amazing.
One thing that I've learned in the past 2 years is very exciting to me. I'm a resident here, a senior citizen, like many of us. And we have assets in this community that we didn't know about. We have opportunities for funding that we didn't know about. And it's all coming together now because we are collaborating We are partnering, and we're becoming very competitive and effective in executing the things that are in the roadmap for stepping up initiatives. So I'm pretty excited about that. Keeps my energy level up.
Commissioner Thompson?
Yep, that's a great program.
I think it's a great program, and I guess I'll ask some questions. The fact that we're collaborating with partners, I think, is an incredible step forward. I think one of the challenges we've had, we had a recent meeting of the Mental Health Advisory Council where we discussed the unfortunate balancing of staff to meet the co-occurrence counseling needs. And one of the big questions was, you know, we've got a mental health crisis, and no doubt we do. And how come there's not the client base to support the level of counselors that were hired? And I think the answer goes to a couple of different things. Number one, I don't think we've done a good enough job of networking to let people know what services are available. Number two, I think we can do a better job of collaborating with partners to make an efficient use of our dollars. It doesn't make sense to me as a counselor to pay general fund money to counselors that, frankly, aren't busy, particularly when, if they are busy, they get reimbursed by the state, which then supports their salary. So I guess I would ask the sheriff, you've talked about some of the other programs. I know the mobile crisis counselors is something that's critically important. I think that's the best place to try to intercede when law enforcement encounters the mentally ill. So could you talk more about what's being done in that program and how it fits in with stepping up?
Sure. And some of your comments I appreciate also, as far as we realized the partnerships that were lacking during the sequential intercept model. We had 40 individuals from several organizations all in a room together, and everybody had their own priority. Law enforcement has their own priority, you know, hospital has their own priority, EMS has their own priority, and getting everybody together to identify what are the priority, the gaps we need to fill, and how can we work together was really where the momentum really started moving fast. And so I was really pleased, and Steve Sparks, was, you know, contribution to his efforts in getting us that grant. He really was the writer in that and helped us move that along, so I appreciate that. Yeah, some of the things we're doing, the mobile crisis, I've always identified as one of the very necessary needs that we need for. I've seen it work well in other counties where crisis workers are on scene and they can divert somebody right then without having the officer have to take that person into custody, whether it's either on a peace officer's hold where they're taking them on a mental hold to the hospital, or because of the long waits at the hospital because there's no beds to adequately have these people to jail. And, you know, we're finding that deputies and officers from our county were staying at the hospital waiting for a bed for 10 hours was common. More than that was not uncommon. And what we're finding is that the deputies were just saying, well, I can arrest this person on a low-level charge and place them in jail. And that's that helped contribute to the problem, unfortunately. And so mobile crisis, going to the scene to where maybe there's a technique, just intervention, family, medication, you know, somewhere else where we can take that individual is so important, because in the sequential intercept model that we're looking at, you know, intercept zero is before the police are ever called, or intercept one before they get to jail is the most important phase. And we're doing a lot at the reentry after they've been in the system with, you know, our TAPS program, transitional and program services, but we need to really hit it at the beginning, and I think that's where it's really important, and mobile crisis is going to be, you know, unfortunately, we've had difficulty finding individuals to work those positions. They are around the clock. Somebody's going to be on, you know, available 24/7, but I know there's been a lot of momentum just recently in that, so I know that they have two or three people hired on getting ready to move that further forward and implement that program. The other thing is just training for our deputies. Once this program started, I had every one of our staff members from the cook in the jail to animal shelter to deputies on the road and in the jail to complete mental health first aid. And something we're going to do ongoing every year, just like we do for our CPR and other first aid. I think it's important that we have that training. And, you know, so we're better to deal with someone in a crisis. The other thing is we have several individuals and even one instructor in our agency that is crisis intervention team, an instructor in crisis intervention team, CIT training, they call it. And my goal is to get all of our certified members trained in that eventually. Again, it's a model that what its initial purpose is in large cities, they have a certain team that all those individuals, and that team goes with crisis workers out to individuals with crisis. But I think in our area, we need to have everybody trained in it. It's a week-long course, so the logistics of it are difficult, but we're starting with all our new hires as soon as we can get them in, and then we throw in a few of the people that are here, and so slowly we're going to get everybody trained in that, and then just be ongoing training as far as that. And I think that's very important, so when they're on the scene with somebody, they, again, there's different techniques to not only keep the individual safe, keep the deputy safe, but also maybe divert them away from jail.
Sheriff Landers made an important point in Intercept Zero. We need to address the problem right there because it's almost too late sometimes. We don't have the resources, institutional resources, to respond to every crisis. So these crises come about in Intercept Zero, and that's where the peer delivered services component. Oregon Health Authority certified peer delivered services. It costs a lot less. We can recruit more people who can do that. They don't have to have the same kind of credentials, but they have great credentials because they interact with the person who is struggling because they lived it. They lived this whole experience, and that's where it becomes. And you take a look at the percentage of work that's involved with that kind of community intervention, a high percentage of it is in the peer delivered services category. We don't have to necessarily send a clinician out, but we do sometimes. We also have the opportunity to use technology. Telepsychiatry is available. We're going to do some pilot programs on that so that when the patrol officer is out there, they have an iPad, they might be able to call up somebody and get it done. So it's kind of like a triage in the patrol officer triage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, other counties do this, and we're coming along, and we're going to make it happen. I see that. I think we all see that, and we're pretty encouraged by all of it, matter of fact.
Yeah, definitely momentum's going. Statistically wise, you know, we're still looking at 30% of our inmate population has some sort of mental illness. I'm hoping to return year after year and say that is going down. That's our goal, and I think we'll know we're accomplishing that when we see that trend go down.
I guess the last comment I'd make is, certainly, mental health is a huge crisis, not only in our county, but statewide, nationally. So I think these are some concrete steps that we're taking, at least locally, to try to make a difference. And, small steps forward, eventually we'll be in a very different spot. But it's a big challenge and not one that is easily resolved, but I think these are good programs.
So. You make an excellent point. We have to address it locally. I was putting the blame for a number of years. Myself is putting on the state system. The state needs more beds, and realize that that's not going to work. It's not going to happen, and we need to address it locally, and we need to use all these resources that we're finding to make it happen. Thank you.
You know what I like? I like having a sustainable business plan, something that you can look out 10 years and see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we don't have to rely on one funding source.
Very good.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that report. All right. We'll move on to doll disposal and solid waste.
Good morning.
Boy, we've got an entourage.
Yes. I'm Joe Cook, and I happen to represent both Thompson's and Dolls. We have three different...
Just for the record, are we getting both reports, Dahl and Thompson?
I was hoping to do both of the rate reviews at the same time.
Okay. They're separate agenda items. I just wanted to make sure they're clear.
Otherwise, you'll hear me repeat the same stuff over and over. So
that's fine. Just wanted to make sure.
So, yeah. I wanted to do the two regular rate reviews and then the proposal for new service after.
Okay.
That's okay. So basically, we have annual rate review reports that we submit every year and look at our costs and revenues and propose rate adjustments as required. You probably heard about the recycling issues that are going on with China and accepting our material and the costs that have been associated with that. As of this time last year, we were receiving about $25 a ton at market in Salem. And as of the current pricing, we're paying $107 a ton now for that same materials. So based on that, for Thompson's, we're looking at about an 8.2% adjustment. And for Dahl's, we're looking at a 10.13% adjustment. Of those, 60 or 70 or 80%, that's in there, 79 for Dahl's and 62 for Thompson. Those are costs, the increase is based on that percentage of increase in cost for recycling. The balance of the rate adjustments are 1 or 2%, and that's because they've been controlling their costs and doing whatever they can to make sure they can get through this. If it weren't for the recycling market changes, we probably, in both cases, would have been looking at just a simple COLA adjustment this year. And if you have any other questions, I'd be glad to talk about it. We have public outreach. I think Thompson's passed something out.
Yeah, I have a couple handouts about public outreach and our recycling guide. If I can hand those. Wayne, do you want to start these around?
Sure. I think you're doing a good job of distributing those. I think I've seen them two or three different times.
Okay, great.
Not a criticism, it's a compliment.
Well, and that's what that's supposed to illustrate. We were updating it even last night, our community outreach. And you'll note on there the bolded words. There's about a dozen different public presentations that we've made with PowerPoints to do the outreach to our customers about what is changing. The Waste 101 guide, front and back, that's the 101 play on words for Highway 101, but it's supposed to be everything you would need to know about what is recyclable. The message is still really simple, and that is to keep it clean and check with your local hauler. And so we feel like we've done a fairly good job of doing the outreach. We still have a few more public meetings where we'll go and do a PowerPoint presentation. There's radio, newsprint, you know, Facebook, Instagram, everything in between when this all started. And Doug, I think it's an important clarification, too. While you're listed down the list quite a ways, that's the formal meeting that we had with you and Wayne.
Sure.
I see you at the Newport Rotary Club. Frequently, we have talked on the phone, text message, those sorts of things to keep you in the loop. Plus, you have other haulers in Lincoln County that report to you that have kind of kept you in the loop. So,
all three of the haulers, to their credit, have been reaching out.
And that's why
sharing information.
We started with the mayor. It's not a lopsided conversation. It's just we knew you were getting the information. One thing I wasn't going to bring up, but I'm going to go ahead and do it because we had a phone call this morning that just hits the nail right on the head. There was a letter to the editor about 2 weeks ago that said Republic Services isn't making any changes to the recycling and they're not raising their rates. So we had a caller today calling and asking for free compost service, which we provide a yard debris service as part of our regular services. Our services include garbage recycling and yard debris. And Diane, who's worked for us for a long time, 15 years, she just did a really nice job to try to explain the changes and what we actually offer. And so Amy has done a great job with Green Schools. We have a grant with the Newport Middle School. There's some positive things going on in solid waste, not just China. And she reached out to Rachel Snyder at Republic and said, hey, we've got an unhappy citizen that says you're not changing any recycling and not raising rates. And her response is, and I'm going to read it, ha, that's hilarious. And so it's not, I'm not upset about the letter to the editor. I wish there would have been a little more research done on behalf of the author. About the only thing that's accurate in the letter was that she attended the luncheon at the chamber. That's a fact. But she did leave early, so we didn't have a chance to really visit with her about the changes. And, you know, Republic's list is more restrictive than ours for what they offer at the curb, and their rates are going up a couple dollars, according to her email. And so, again, we work so hard to do outreach and do accurate outreach that it is a challenge when I read something on Facebook or in the newspaper, and it's nothing against the News Times. I don't believe there's a fact checker for every letter that's written. But please, please, the message today is keep it clean and check with your hauler if you have questions. Your local hauler, not a hauler in the valley that answers your phone call in Arizona.
Your curbside hauler.
Our curbside hauler. Call Diane or Lisa or Carol at Thompson Sanitary. Ask them if you have questions. They work right out in Agate Beach. They know the answer.
Okay, for doll disposal, I concur with
Chuck,
Rob.
You want to, for the record, introduce yourself.
Chuck Lerwick, doll disposal operations manager. We have we found we had some deficiencies in our outreach. We had an old, antiquated website that was hard to navigate, and so this was kind of a good thing in a bad way that got our attention. That we've really tuned that up. We have a new website; it launched yesterday. Mm-hmm. So it's up and running, and then we have hired just a fantastic professional to answer all our Facebook issues that come up. And we've started on Facebook. We have some contests going. We've done presentations. I've done Rotary. And we did a chamber luncheon. Pretty much the same thing Rob's been doing, and it's been kind of fun to work together on this collaboratively because it's a problem that's statewide, it's nationwide, it's a huge problem, and like our brochure, it sure looks an awful lot alike. And we're trying to keep everything mirrored so there's no confusion between one hauler to the next. We're really collaborating, trying to get this message out that, you know, it's a real, real concern, and we're addressing it with a lot of money, with advertisements and brochures and websites. And so we're doing the best we can, and I have to also concur with Rob. It's frustrating, and I'm an old guy, so the Facebook thing's off the table for me. But
you're an old guy. What are we?
Well, now come on, Doug. That suit looks like something I wore at a wedding once, so I'm not going to say anything.
I rest my case.
That's how far back I go. But you know, all the bantering on Facebook is really—it's really tough to read. You know, it really is, because it's just, there's no facts. It's all just somebody's opinion, and then somebody climbs on and another dig. So with that, we want to see the recycle kept clean, and when in doubt, call us. Just call us. We will help you navigate through the whole process. It's not that big a deal, but I think a lot of people like the thrill of, you know, getting on Facebook and sharing their opinions with the world. But just please, I ask that just if there's any questions, just call us. We'll be more than happy to help.
I guess one of the comments I'd make is that I think, to me, there's a lot. The message from all three of the county haulers, and we've got two here in North Lincoln Sanitary, obviously in the Lincoln City area. I mean, the message has been pretty much the same. And huge increase in costs from what was a revenue source, and that obviously has a tremendously negative impact on the business operations. And I think the message is uniform as to what is recyclable. I know I've asked the question, apparently just because it's a plastic with a one on it, no, it's not necessarily recyclable. It has to have a neck. And so again, I think that message has been uniform. The other thing I'd point out is I had an opportunity when I was up in Beaverton recently cleaning out my father's garage. And I took I took a carload of material to the recycle center. First of all, I had to drive from Beaverton to Forest Grove. And then it was $69 for the car, regardless of what I had in it. And when I look at that cost compared to the costs here locally, I think we're pretty competitive. And the other thing is, boy, there wasn't much co-mingling. I mean, the garbage went in one bin, the paper in one, the metal in another. And, frankly, there were times I didn't know where to put what I had. But, again, I think that provides some perspective on some of our costs and services relative to other providers throughout the area. So any other questions, comments?
I would piggyback real briefly. We have moved our recycling center to our business office, which is 7450 Northeast Avery. We've hired a...
I discovered that.
Yeah, and we've tried to signage that as well as possible, but we've hired Doug Canfield, who is retired Oregon State Police, and he does a wonderful job for us to try to explain to customers what is and what is not recyclable. We unfortunately do charge a fee, and so that is the situation that we're in with the cost of having recycling go to a MRF and be processed. So, but we do think that's an improvement, and we do have it staffed, and it's cleaner, brighter, drier, all those great things. So,
okay. Commissioners, just maybe a quick note again for our purposes that we have franchises for the unincorporated areas. We do not franchise the activities in the city, so, and we're usually the smaller partner with that, with the cities that do it. So North Lincoln, of course, does Depot Bay and Lincoln City, and they have just had those discussions with the city councils and mayors of those communities. I think you've already had your presentations to the city of Newport. Is that coming up?
Actually, that's next week.
Next week. Yeah. And how about Walport and
We've done Walport, Yahats, and Sillettes. We have Toledo's this evening.
It's Toledo's this evening. So those the same presentations are going out to the other areas that also franchise these particular services, and they're hearing the same messages. So,
very good. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
At all disposal, Thompson Sanitary.
So I'm going to step away, and they're going to talk about another service. And
okay.
I have another meeting at 11, so if you don't mind,
thanks, Rob.
Thank you for being here.
Bye, Rob.
Bye, Chuck.
Good luck with Facebook.
Bye, Rob.
Bye, Commissioners.
So we're ready to move on to the yard debris
Please.
Portion. We've been asked by several of the cities and the county as well in some meetings to propose a solution for yard debris in our area of the county. And what actually Chuck came up with was a system that I think is real cost-effective, and given the rate adjustment we have, cost-effectiveness seemed important. What we're looking at there is doing an every other week yard debris program. So get a car, it would be serviced every other week, and the other week you'd have recycling service. So we'd be recycling from weekly to every other week, yard debris to every other week. And then we just, the customers would get a calendar, and they'd know which week to put out recycling and which week to put out yard debris. We're able to do that without buying a new truck, without hiring a new driver, without all the additional costs. So for our average customer, which is a 35-gallon cart, the cost is $246 a month. And that would be everybody would get that. It would be part of the garbage service, part of the bundled package like recycling is. That's about an 8% increase and over the current rate. And we wanted to propose that and let you know that it was available. I think it's the next item, the only item that really is going to have a significant impact on the waste shed's recovery rate. There's a lot of yard debris out there, and there's not a whole lot of other stuff to collect.
Questions? I guess clarification. Georgia Pacific at one time was buying that material, but they're going to natural gas. Is that correct?
I think we're 3 years into that they've stopped.
Okay.
They've stopped burning, yeah. So.
Stop burning wood. They're burning natural gas.
They're burning natural gas, right, but they haven't bought any chips or any kind of wood from us for 3 years now. And then this also helps alleviate, you know, a lot of folks that, you know, still have traditional backyard burns that, you know, in all the neighborhoods, and you know, it's kind of the rites of fall, but this really helps clean that up, you know, and I'm really proud of the price that we came up with that. I think that's really equitable, and then it takes the third truck off the route, chasing each other through town on all the streets. And
I think it's innovative. It's looking at a way to provide service and do it in a way that keeps costs down. So,
Commissioners, if I might note for this one too, because again, we're a small player in the overall quantities of this particular material too. And what we've basically said is, in order to make this work at this price, as I understand it, you're going to need to have the cities come on board. You can't have the county do one thing and the cities do separate. Or, and maybe I want to make sure I'm right about that.
Well, that's interesting, Wayne, because we were just discussing that yesterday. And we have, I think we can make it work with the South County and county.
Okay.
We'll work together, because I'm not sure. Celebs is kind of chewing on it. You know, they accepted the rate increase, which was for the recycling in our CPI, and the yard debris, they were not warmed up to it yet. And I haven't given up, so I'm hoping they get on board. And then Toledo, I hope that they happen. But I'm sure that we'll be able to handle the county and south for Yahats and Walport. Walport approved it. Yahats is still out, you know, thinking it over.
Okay. And then if Sletz didn't do it, would you want to do East County? I mean, I'm just not sure how you logistically do trucks on different days if you're picking up the stuff in Sletz.
Yeah, we'd still do the county out east.
Out east.
Yeah, we'd do all of Lincoln County. And then those
people... You just pick Sletz differently if they decide not to do it?
Right, if they decide not to do it. But I would assume that they'd want to get on board.
Okay. That's a little bit different than when we've looked at it in the past in terms of... You're really letting the cities take the lead to say, let's go with the program, and then we'll come on board if they do it.
So with Thompson's currently doing county, there's...
And the city of Newport, when the city, they actually implemented with City of Newport, and then the county came on board with that. Okay. It wouldn't work for the county alone, that they couldn't have done it with the county alone.
Right.
So I'm not sure, what's our next step?
Well, I think you've got a consideration of this new service as a secondary issue to the rate request. What I might suggest, and let's talk timing. When would you want to implement this?
The carts are going to be, if we, per se, pulled the trigger, the carts are at least 8 to 10 weeks out to manufacture and make and brand and get here. Then we're going to have a blitz on delivery. We're going to have a delivery service come in. They'll rent U-Hauls and have 10 trucks and 15, 30 people out there delivering carts. And that should probably be done in 2 weeks, so it'd probably be a 12-week from the day we get the go-ahead.
Okay. And Walport's happy with that particular date, and you're going to present that to Toledo?
Yes.
Well, what we can do is, since we meet on a weekly basis, what you could do is direct us what to do with the rate increase you're doing now, and then give us a report back after you've talked to Toledo tonight to see where that's going, and then we can do that as a separate action.
Okay, so we'd bring back the rates for both Dahl and Thompson's
next week.
And then this new service, depending on the timing.
Yeah, give us a report after you've actually met with everybody. We'll
then
know where we go with that.
The rate increase would be effective July 1.
July 1 is the day we're looking at.
Okay.
Commissioner Thompson. All right. We'll proceed.
Okay, so when do you want to meet again?
Give me a call after you've met with all the cities. When do you meet?
Tomorrow, tonight's the last city.
One, yeah. After you meet with Toledo, just give us a call. We'll figure out where we're going from there.
They're going to do the rates.
Okay, so we are going to do the rates, so, right?
Yes. Yes, yes, okay. We'll do the rates next week. For you and for Thompson's.
That would be the...
Yep.
Okay.
All righty.
Are we clear?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck with that suit, Doug. I'd stay inside today if you could.
I'm going to go down on a waterfront, test Commissioner Thompson's theory. All right, we're on to Commissioner reports. Commissioner Hall.
I've got a couple of things. And first is some good news on the workforce housing front. And this is news that came out of Salem on Friday. As you know, one of the many initiatives we created 10 years ago with our housing and homeless plan was a community land trust. And basically, community land trusts are designed to provide home ownership opportunities for people one tier above the Habitat for Humanity eligibility range. It's a proven model that's been around since the 1960s. There are more than 300 land trusts in the United States. Ours had only done two houses so far, but right now we've got five more in the pipeline from other funding sources, three in Newport and two in Lincoln City. And
And through our parent organization, Proud Ground of Portland, we submitted a proposal. Governor Brown announced a workforce housing, rural workforce housing program statewide. There were a number of applications for funding through regional solutions for this program. Five pilot projects were funded statewide, including one for the Community Land Trust here in the amount of $515,000. So I know probably the first question from a lot of people will be, how many homes are we going to be able to do through that? And the answer is, we don't know yet. We're working on coming up with a number. It's going to depend on the home price, the other funding sources we can leverage, but we'll hopefully have a projected number really soon. And just one more step in kind of chipping away at this need.
Just to clarify, too, my understanding is that the Proud Ground Project works with your public agencies and the private developers, so it's a public-private partnership.
Yes. Yes.
Address this.
Yeah, it's not a government agency. It's a 501c nonprofit, though through these last several years, the county, City of Newport, City of Lincoln City have provided the major operational funding. Walport and Yahats have also been funders and provided representatives to our board of directors, but it is a private nonprofit entity, and after many years of slow progress, all of a sudden it seems to be really taking off, and the timing couldn't be better.
Good news for housing.
Yes, sir. So I went yesterday about the Food for Sea conference, which is what's a meat science, and fish plants, and there was fishermen too, a few fishermen there. It was I didn't get to attend the whole conference because of other things that were going on in the county at this time, but I talked on aquaculture and was on a panel with aquaculture with some of the leading innovators, and I was curious about one thing that I hadn't realized that come as far as that was like a potential. It's a dulse, it's a seaweed that is being produced down in Port Orford, and they're looking to expand into other ports, and it may be a new market. Commonly used in Japan, not here, but it sounds like it's finding a home here in a lot of the restaurants that in the future you may be eating seaweed.
Interesting. Mr. Chair, I had another item.
Yes, go ahead.
On if I could. And that is something that I know several people are here about today, and that is biosolids. And speaking of Facebook, this is how we were initially alerted to this, I believe, at least I was. And the particular concern is the application of biosolids on property adjacent to, and my understanding is, with only a 50-foot buffer from the Sletz River. So I want to thank Planning Director Otto Husing for his assistance and his staff's assistance, and also I've done some research on my own, so I'd just like to present, you know, I'm still in the information gathering phase, but just some key information. The federal government sets, through the federal EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, kind of a broad regulatory framework for the application of biosolids for agricultural purposes, but leaves it up to individual states to regulate that. And what are biosolids? Basically, it's the treated sludge that comes out of wastewater treatment plants. Now, in Oregon, the 2001 legislature passed a bill that allowed biosolids to be applied to agricultural lands as an exclusive farm use. And so I've reviewed that legislation. I've reviewed the accompanying administrative rules. It makes it quite clear that it is Oregon DEQ that takes the permit applications for this program, both for the municipal entities that want to dispose of biosolids this way and for the individual landowners who want to have the biosolids spread on their property. It also spells out quite specifically that local government cannot, we are preempted from adopting stricter requirements than what's set out in the state law and administrative rules. And they do provide for buffer strips, but again, this is quoting from the administrative rules. Buffer strips should be provided along well-traveled highways. The size of the buffer strip will vary with local conditions and should be left to the discretion of the DEQ field representative. No bulk Class B biosolids or domestic septage should be spread at the site closer than 50 feet to any ditch, channel, pond, or waterway, or within 200 feet of a domestic water source or well. So if, in fact, this placement is within 50 feet of the river, that is being done in accordance with the current state administrative rules governing the program. So I have made contact. I actually had two conversations with Representative David Gomberg yesterday to convey the citizen concerns to him, to convey the information that I've gathered so far. And at this point, you know, he wants more information as well, but indicated he would be willing to look at the problem or the issue and whether some legislation would be appropriate. And I do plan to contact Senator Roblin as well.
Bill, I've looked at this, and the one thing that I didn't see in there, maybe you found it, was how often do you inspect it to make sure they're following the rules?
That's a good question, and one thing I still don't know is once a permit is issued, how long it's good for. I did go looking for figures. I couldn't find anything yet on how wide this practice is in Oregon. Nationally, I found figures that go back to 2004. Federal tracking, it said that year 7.1 million dry tons of biosolids were either used or disposed of in this country. 37% or 2.6 million tons were applied to agricultural lands. 45% were incinerated or went to landfills, and then smaller slices for other disposal methods.
So if there are questions about compliance with the DEQ regulations, those, I mean, we can certainly forward them to DEQ or Gomberg, to Representative Gomberg.
Or Senator Roblin.
Or Senator Roblin, but I would say certainly the more contacts they have, the better, frankly, to try and get answers.
Right.
Well, I'm speaking as a person who fishes in the ocean. I'm expected to be inspected on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't a regular basis of inspection by qualified inspectors, then maybe there should be.
And I'm not a scientist, but I would just say on the face of it, I was frankly surprised that they do allow application within 50 feet of a waterway. And I would think at very least if the state is going to let the program continue, they ought to look at adjusting that.
Well, we can certainly encourage our representatives to look at the issue to make the process better.
Yep. And I do have a verbal commitment from Representative Gomberg that he will do that.
I've talked to him also.
Good. Good.
All right. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. I have not done my report yet, and I will ask Lisa Ely to come forward, who was the lady who paid $150 for me to wear this. And I will ask our public information officer to take a picture.
And I was just with David Gomberg at Know Your Newport. He had to run to the state, and he wanted a picture. He wanted proof.
There it is. Thank you for your support, Casa.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for your service on our board, too. All right. Thank you for indulging me. We lose Commissioner Hall. I guess, sure, well, we can go on without.
Yeah, we're doing too low.
All right. Let's see. I'm doing my glasses.
Boy, you're lucky. I was thinking about offering money to have you walk down the end of the dock with the glasses.
Oh. How much would you pay me? I'm willing to raise money for CASA.
It could be more than just here.
All right. Well, move along.
We might get nailed for harassment. Yeah. I don't want to pay the fine.
I didn't know there was a hazard aspect. All right, move along to constituent input. This is an opportunity for anyone to address the Board of Commissioners on any item of their choice. We ask you to limit your comments up to no more than 5 minutes, and commissioners may or may not respond. I sense there may be some people in the audience who would like to address us. Who wants to go first? And for the record, please identify yourself. And again, please limit your comments to 5 minutes.
Hi. Kaylee Davis. Probably know me from Facebook. Yeah. And I'm a farmer and a landowner, along with my husband, along the Siletz River in the Logsdon Valley. And I'm here to present a formal request. I understand you just told me you can't, but I think that you probably can. So for the citizens, concerned citizens of the Siletz River, here's our formal request for the immediate cease and desist of distributing all biosolids in and around the Siletz area and the surrounding watershed. Now, we the concerned people for the Siletz River, save our Siletz River, and all living creatures that rely on it are requesting you, commissioners, to use your ability to demand that all entities or currently or planning to in the future cease and desist now spreading any biosolids, treated sewage, on the farmlands along the Siletz River. We are gravely concerned for the health and welfare of the entire Siletz River community and all living creatures which rely on it. Due to the substantial amount of proven studies presenting biosolids evidence, of the inevitable damage by the spreading of these biosolids on farmlands, as outlaid in the attached inevitable damage that it could or has caused. Also quoted from the attached overview, Thomas Maller, PhD. And I just quoted from him. The indefinite problem, 10,000 of these components will contaminate the land for decades and perhaps even hundreds, if not thousands of years once they are applied to the land. And there's simply nothing one can do to decontaminate the land. Furthermore, the tests that would determine the extent of which these toxins will be taken up by the plants or animals we consume simply do not exist. With 30,000 different synthetic man-made chemicals, once applied on the land, the same goes for the vast majority of biological pathogens, like superbugs, that will spread on the land with the sludge. Once the microplastics from the sludge are applied on the land, they will contaminate the land for hundreds of years, or the waterways if they make it there, washed away by rain. Once applied on the land, it will either stay or end up in the river. Oops, I probably read that title. Lakes or ocean. The genie cannot put it back in the bottle. Once it gets out, the best solution is not to apply the toxic matter on the land in the first place. We're too late for that. Attached overview, the dangers of the sewer sludge biosolids by Thomas Maller, PhD. DEQ is aware of the quality concerns of the Siletz River and is evaluating the potential danger from sources of these implements. They are considering whether the biosolids may contribute to water quality issues. DEQ assembled a local stakeholder advisory committee in 2012 to provide advice to the DEQ in developing strategies for the water quality improvement as part of the Mid-Coast Total Maximum Daily Loads. And you can see their website, and I attach the website there. It does not work any longer, though. For more information on this effort, try calling David Waltz, Mid-Coast Basin Coordinator, 541-667-7345. So, for the health and safety of the community and all the living creatures for which it relies, we the people ask you, the commissioners, to demand the cease and desist of the spreading of biosolids on all farmlands in the Siletz River and its watershed by all entities, save our Siletz River. And that's our request. I think that you can do it from what I've researched, but I don't know the laws. But I do know we have a well. And I want to tell you right now, I'm very concerned about our well. And since the notice is out now, if our well is tested and it is contaminated, I'm coming. I want you guys to help us. I'm holding responsible. We can't let this continue. Can I give this to you?
Sure.
Also, the field right next to where they dug is the church well, where they also had school.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll make sure everybody gets copies. And
sorry, I only have one.
Certainly forward it to the appropriate individuals. Anything else? We've got about a minute left.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Alan Davis. I'm a disabled vet. I serve my country in top secret missions. It's on NARA, National Administration Record Administration. It's also in the National Security Archives. I've been ignored by all of you except for Mr. Hall. Thank you. First of all, our government said DDT in the 60s was safe. As you know, it wasn't. Second of all, that it said Agent Orange and cancer was safe. It wasn't. Third of all, they said Roundup is safe. California is currently suing Monsanto because it isn't safe. Oregon right now is suing Monsanto also because of the soil on parts of the Columbia River has PCPs in them and some of the fish you can't eat. The Siletz River soils has never been tested. The banks, the algae. So is all this water going to all the people and the children in our community? And none of you care? That's frightening. Second of all, Richard Honor, a Washington microbiologist, is now on a crusade to outlaw this practice in Washington State. And we should follow, period. Spokane, Washington, uses the same thing that Lincoln County does, spreads the biosolids in some farmer fields. They've had such a public outcry that they're going to try to incinerate it. Even though Washington State has said that it is legal, but the outcry was so bad, they're finding another way to do this. Thus, that's where Richard Honor has come in and proved a microbiologist, it is not safe at all. Third of all, 50% of the chemicals will never be taken out after processing. It is in the ground. We're drinking it. You're drinking it. Your glass of water probably has it if you took it out of the Siletz River. The last one, the church is right next to one of these fields. I've listened to children play out there all the time. And you know when they play? They get thirsty. Their well has never been tested. So any of these children get this cancer, all you guys, all you, are responsible for not stopping it. And the last thing, if this turns into a Superfund site to clean these fields up, it's going to cost the county millions. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your service to our country.
You're welcome.
Next, anyone else?
My name is Kevin Goodell, and I'm a Siletz tribal member and a veteran also. And I'm concerned. I'm just trying to back these people that with all this information. And I've been looking into it just for a short while, but I got concerns about the DEQ only worrying about increased nitrogen and phosphorus on the fields. And not anything else. One concern I've had for years is all the stuff the cities aren't required to test for that are chemicals that can show up in sewage and affect drinking water, fish, deer, elk, and the people. And there are other alternatives to doing this, and I believe we need to stop this today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, yeah. Thank you for your service to our country.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. George.
You guys will all be happy to know you won. So the court decision came down and I lost my appeal. So you got a $70,000 judgment against me that you will never see because I am destitute. So have fun with that. The other thing is, of course, we're all very concerned what's happening. And I went and contacted Toledo. Toledo is planning on starting their dumping at the end of May, beginning of June. And so that is going to take, and they weren't informing me how many hundreds of thousands of gallons they plan on also dumping. But I understand that the Lincoln City, the fields that they also dump out there, they went out and tested, and the fields were at 90% capacity before they ever even started, so they weren't able to continue dumping there. So they've already exceeded or almost exceeded their maximum level already before starting. I came home. I went to the aerial spray seminar down in Yahats. And I really wanted to let everybody know, and it was kind of funny that you guys are fighting for state supersede rules on your county voters to ban aerial spraying, but yet you're using your county rule to ban a state licensed dispensary. So maybe we'll have appeal issues when you get your spray ban approved. This is what I came home to. Capstone sprayed. Oh no. All along Pioneer Trail. And it is states right here not to be sprayed around waterways. I took groups of children and we did a salmon habitat restoration all along the streams, planted thousands of trees, Toledo schools, and now you've come along and sprayed it along the rivers with your poison. So that's another issue. You know, you guys really need to stop this and support the people, because this has been going on for 20 years, is what I've been told. And we know science, we're not that stupid anymore. Mr. Belmont, you said it's highly regulated. That's what you told me. Highly regulated and tested. And now, as in 1 week, they found out more than obviously anybody knew here in this commission as to the dangers that are happening to our water supply. And I know for a fact, because I lived with a contaminated well that was put in by this county, almost killed my daughter. I still got the jar of water. And so that's why I became concerned, because I know what it does to our children. This has to stop. And you guys, oh, and the other thing is Toledo. So this is so funny to me that in all these years, you guys couldn't figure out what to do. So Toledo, I talked to them because they've got issues also with cross-contamination of the GP mill that's going into the wastewater. Okay, there's a potential that we've had problems, and I've talked to DEQ about that. We've also got, from what I understand, paint chips showing up in the wastewater treatment, okay, from the boatyard. So there's cross-contaminations going, and then you're going to go spread it on our drinking water. So we've got an incinerator at the mill, right? You can dry that waste out. And from what I was told is it can be turned into pellets to be burned in wood stoves. So if you can burn it in a wood stove, why can't we burn it at GP Mill? Why can't that mill, for the first time ever, actually benefit the people of these communities instead of causing us so much harm? So that's something we need to look into, is drying this stuff out and incinerate it instead of putting it into the watershed. So hopefully we'll get some new commissioners. And Mr. Thompson, I'm really sorry that you didn't actually, hopefully you're going to stay very active in the community. I hate to lose you because I think you truly are focused on the water. I know you never have been. So we look forward to the upcoming election.
As do I.
Thank you.
Any other public comment?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, can I say one more thing? Mid-Coast Watershed put out a study. They've been monitoring the river. Do you know where they say the problem is on the watershed? The town of Siletz. They're blaming it on the people of Siletz, while every town in this county is dumping their garbage on the river. You blame the people.
Well, I'm a Siletz people. They better not be blaming me. Hi, good morning. I'm Celine Relatas. I'm a Siletz tribal member. And I just operate on a wing and a prayer. I'm a little late today because there happened to be a family member that got shot last night. So I was on the phone, and I appreciate our law enforcement for their awesome work for keeping the rest of my family safe. And I haven't even told my friends that, but it sounds like my nephew may have lost his foot. And so I'm a little shook up today. But I'm new to learning about all of this. I appreciated what you said, Mr. Hall, and what you said, Mr. Thompson. But as a person that's worked for my tribe in the cultural department for 20 years, we have always said that the ocean, when the tide is out, the table is set. When we make decisions, it is based on you and the next seven generations after you. These are our philosophies. Mr. Hunt knows me, knows my family. And so I know you're concerned about the water that you're drinking. You have got to be. How many years have we been buying bottled water? How many of us purchase Emerald Springs waters in our homes? Why are we doing that? Why? Because we're not good stewards of the land. You all think you live in the box, you are in charge of this county. Be in charge. You know, take her statement and really take it to task. The DEQ, there are studies. Now, mind you, I'm not educated with this, but their studies do not do a complete study that is necessary. So if they're minding the children, they're not doing a very good job. The cities are supposed to be monitoring, Mr. Thompson, this waste. Who is responsible for the city monitoring this? You asked a similar question that I'm asking right now. So nobody's monitoring it. Kayleen and Alan are monitoring it. They had 2,500 views on the recording that was sent to you all of those trucks zooming by even on Mother's Day. You know, those guys must have moms, you know. But anyway, this began in May. 500,000 of gallons already was spread from Depot Bay. 500,000.
Gallons.
Just put that in your pipe, you know? I mean, it's like, that's a lot of solid waste. There's a Cree saying that says, and here we are, you're the doctors, you're the medicine people to heal this water. That's to stop. I don't know if we can heal the water. But after all the trees are gone and there's no air to breathe, and after all the water's polluted and there's no clean water to drink, only then we'll realize we can't eat money. That's been a saying from the early 1900s. And look where we are. Look at the ocean. Look at the ocean. 1979, got married, flew over that in a helicopter. Oh my God. I was crying. I didn't want to do that again. And I have. You're looking at your clock, but you know what? I have to say, you guys think outside of the box. You're the commissioners for this county. Be in charge, you know? Mr. Belmont, look into this more. We're not just talking about the water you drink. We're talking about your children, your grandchildren. You know, we may sound a little radical, a little emotional, whatever, but we are very concerned. I posted that I was going to the Planning Commission meeting to introduce this concern of the citizens of our county. I had 55 people share my post, and I was like, save the Siletz River. That was me standing there like this with some children. That's why we're here. It affects each one of us. Each one of us. And don't get me started on GP. My husband works there, but, you know, more laws, yeah. But in the meantime, we should do a motion to stay. Stop these trucks till we have some studies done. You know, we don't even know who signed these permits. Why don't we know that? That's some homework you guys should find out. Who signs these permits? Who allows this? You permit what you promote. It's time that we stop doing this and save our water for the future generations. Thanks for your time.
Anyone else?
Excuse me.
Betty, for the record, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Betty Kamikawa from Toledo, and I am a scientist in this. I am an agronomist, was raised in Illinois, and so most of my background is Illinois soil testing, but it pretty much applies everywhere in the world. Back in the 80s, we did apply sludge, and the soil testing lab I worked at used methods to test the soil, and we sent the sludge to other laboratories to test. And we were looking at heavy metals. Now, heavy metals have gone down in sludge, but other things have gone up. We now have cosmetics in our water, and that gets into our soil, all of our wastewater. So any vitamins that you take, any pharmaceuticals you take, anything that your body eliminates because it didn't need it goes out in your waste, which is in this biosolids now. Anything that you wash down the drain that was on your hands, in your clothes, the fire retardant that they put in our clothing, and as you wash it in the laundromat or at the laundry, it comes right out and goes down the drains, and it's all in this biosolid that we're applying to the ground, and they're not testing for that. That's the biggest problem. Now, Mr. Hall, you said that you have the same information I have. The buffer strip area. It says domestic water sources are wells. No bulk Class B solid biosolids or domestic septage should be applied within 200 feet. I believe that the Siletz River is a water source, a domestic water source, which means they should not be applying that 50 feet from the river. It needs to be 200, and that needs to be checked. There was all this information. It's all in here. Everything that you need to know, who's got the information, who should have the information. According to this, our health department should have a copy of all of those permits that's required according to this information. And this is from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. So who's got it? Who signed it? It's all right there. Somebody needs to find it. And it can be revoked. The site authorization can be revoked. And that's in here on page 15. And if they're not following the domestic water source 200 feet rule, then it can be revoked.
And revoked by DEQ, is that correct?
I believe so. Okay. Yes, yes. And but as a commission, you can draw it to their attention. So can the health department, so can the citizens, and that's what we're trying to do. My concern is that once it's in the soil, it doesn't necessarily stay there. Heavy metals will, as the soil pH gets lower, they become available. And we don't know on these other things. Now, the soils here in Oregon are very acidic to begin with. So when you add water to it, so you're adding water, you raise the pH, but it doesn't raise it enough to hold those things in the soil. The other thing is that the part of the plant that takes up that all of these things is the leafy part. They're growing hay on that, those fields, which me on a lot of those fields and other things, I don't know what else they're growing on all of them. But that means that any animal that's eating that is now taking up whatever is in those plants, and it's being stored in their cells, in their bodies. And if it's, you know, cattle, we're eating that. And if it gets into the river, and the, if it's something that can be washed into the river, then we have a problem with the fish picking it up, or the crayfish, because people eat those. And then you also have the problem of the insects picking up the dust, which also has this stuff in it, and then the birds eating that, or the little animals eating that, or, you know, it's just on and on and on. It's not just the people. It's the whole environment. And then we have the problem of once it's in, you can't take it out. And it becomes a huge issue. And it's not going to stay right in the Siletz area necessarily either, because it is a river. So it's going to, you know, travel on down. And, you know, we have to be concerned about those things. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, we've allowed everyone 5 minutes.
I still had a minute, I thought. But
A couple of things
I forgot to add after everybody pointed out. We have herds of elk. Have you been out to Logsdon? In the fields where they're being dumped, many 60. Well, there's one herd of 60. There's another herd of 30. They're coming through. They're in there all the time. There's hundreds of geese in there. And Lincoln, with one field particularly, Lincoln City quit dumping because the farmer was also dumping shrimp. That's what made the nitrogen so high. After talking with the city of Lincoln City, I thought they were nice and quit. They quit because they broke their agreement because the farmer broke his agreement. The city is supposed to monitor. Now, I know one field that I saw that is marked, and I'm under the information. The city of Toledo's already dumped once, by the way, guys. I don't know how much. They're coming back. I have a picture of their little truck, and they're coming back. I called. I asked him neighborly to stop. He said he'd think about it, but, you know, what are we going to do with it? Toledo owns lots of land, but their farmers don't want it. So the cities are supposed to do this. There is cattle grazing on one of those fields right now. It had to have been dumped on starting May 1st. So if they, in fact, dumped on that field, the cattle are in there now. These people are not only selling their hay, they're selling their cattle. There's farmers hunting these elk. And the city is supposed to be monitoring all this. They should have graphs showing daily how much is put down. And just for a little more, on the way here, it was raining, it was missing hard. There's puddles on the road. They're on their way to dump now. They're making 4 trips a day. Each truck, 5,000 gallons. Yesterday, I did call. I sent an email to Paul Kennedy of the DEQ. I have filed complaints. I didn't file one yesterday, but I sent him a video of the truck spray and of the water on the ground. And my concern that they were out spreading it then. Well, they were out spreading it today, and it was doing the same. City's responsible, but then again, who's responsible for the city? Please make them stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
More question. I know I cut mine short.
All right, go ahead.
County in Washington, they were also told that the DEQ is also regulated by DEQ. Their commissioner said, we're pulling all the permits. Right? In 2012. It took them 6 years for the state of Washington to take them to court. Meanwhile, none of this human waste treated was being spread. So legal counsel Wayne Belmont, you can tell them cease immediately. The DEQ in Oregon said they might take you to court and might not. But meanwhile, it would be stopped. And one other last statement. We've lived out there for 28 years. 25 years of it, they've been spreading this like crazy. There's literally millions and millions of gallons in them fields. It's sad.
Alan, can I ask you a question? Do you know the name of that county, or could you get that to us?
Actually, it's Lincoln.
Lincoln County, Washington?
Yes.
Okay.
So thank you. It's kind of ironic.
That's convenient.
And it's in that Spokane local paper.
Okay.
Straw.
That's it.
Thank you.
Lincoln County lead the way.
It's in the process. It's still sitting.
Anyone else?
It's never
wish to offer public.
I did want to say the pH on that waste that they're dumping, according to the test, is 3.9, Mr. Thompson. So it's very acidic. 3.9 pH. They're pouring.
Anyone else? All right.
Executive.
Next item is executive session. I will say that I think we can bring this issue, highlight this issue to the appropriate agencies, but I would encourage all of you to go directly to DEQ. Go directly to our state senator Arnie Roblin and our House Representative David Gomberg. Those are the two people that have the most direct influence on DEQ. Not that we're not willing to support it, not that we're not aware of the problem, but they're the ones that actually directly oversee those departments.
You can stop it immediately. Well, you can say that, and your attorney can do it right now.
Will.
Then it's up to DEQ to take you in court, just like they did to Washington. This can be tied up for years, Mr. Hoffman.
Okay, we'll
consult. Look into that. We'll consult with the attorney.
We sent a legal after medical cannabis
we got from the planning department Monday, and we need something fast.
We will do what we can.
Yeah, all living creatures rely on
this.
Everything. You, I, and everything.
Okay.
Everything.
All right.
So you
thank
you.
Next item is an executive session. We'll be convening under ORS 192.660, (2)(H). To discuss litigation matters, and this is a executive session, so we ask the members of the audience to please leave. Lisa, good to see you.
You too. Mighty fine.
Okay, I'm going to reconvene the. Recess.
No, we already recessed.
We're reconvening into an open meeting. We just had an executive session under ORS 192.660, (2)(H), to discuss litigation matters, and we're now going to have a discussion and possible decision in a public meeting. Council Belmont or Council Herbage, you want to summarize where we're at?
Yes. The issue before the Board of Commissioners is whether to join in with 12 other counties in the MERS litigation, which is currently in federal court.
Okay.
And based on the information that was presented in executive session, as well as discussions that I have had with AOC's legal counsel, Rob Bovet, with Alex Kyler, who is the lobbyist for Lane County, it is my personal belief that while there is some cost to be incurred in this for legal fees, that the importance of protecting the integrity of the real estate recording system and frankly the loss of fees through the county clerk's office that's being incurred because of this, I would be in favor of us joining the 12 other counties that are already a party to this lawsuit, and I would like to make a motion to that effect.
Okay.
Second.
Do we need more specific language?
No, it gives us direction what to
okay.
do.
Okay. And again, my primary concern is the integrity of the mortgage recording system. And,
yes.
So I also support it. All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. Okay. Anything else, Council Belmont? All right, with that, our next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be Wednesday, May 23rd at 9:30 a.m. here in the Lincoln County Courthouse Room 108. Until that date and time, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Commissioner.